Welcome to the 8th episode of Hot Air. My name is Greg Esser. This week I have the distinct pleasure of being alongside player, offense, and defensive handler at times this season, Glenn Poole.
Good evening, Greg.
Glenn's been on before, of course, so you'll recognize that voice. I want to get some administrative stuff out of the way here first, Glenn, if you don't mind. I'd like to thank Broke Royals for playing that great entry music. They've done so every week. They do it live. Just kidding, it's a recording, but we do thank them every week. I'd like to thank Papa John's Pizza, Oak Creek Apparel, Waveborn, Sunglasses, Big Board, Kellogg Conference Center, as well as Atlas Brew Works. Those are the Breeze's sponsors in 2015, and we're also very happy to have all of them on board.
I agree, Greg. I gotta tell you, I love Atlas Brew Works. I've really enjoyed drinking their beers and drinking them at the Big Board.
There you go. Two sponsors in one. That's just the Glenn Poole way, checking off all the boxes. I love it. So, Glenn, you know the rules here, which is get comfortable, and I can already see you're comfortable behind that mic as you're enjoying the sponsors and talking about your beer consumption. But the other rule, of course, is Breeze puns play, wind puns play heavily. And I'm looking for the wittiest member of the Breeze. Last time you had an outstanding performance. We got some big puns in here, and today we're going to see if we can do it again.
No pressure.
High pressure. So, things I want to talk about today, I want to recap the Breeze season. It ended recently. I mentioned it a little bit with Ben Fang last week as he was announcing his signing for 3 years with the Breeze. That's exciting. The 7-7 may be a little less exciting, but I want to talk about, you know, what that means to a player and kind of what that means building this Breeze franchise going forward.
You know, I disagree. I think it is exciting. I think putting together the team we did this year, I'm really excited about the direction this team is going. I think that we took a lot of new guys, young guys, and we brought them together under a system. It was a real DC-based team, and we had a lot of success. I think we struggled at times, especially on some of the road trips, but overall, I think it was a really exciting season. I can't wait to see what happens next year.
I think that's well said. And then the other things I want to talk about are some of the Breeze stats. I'm a stat head. I'm an analytical guy, and I love being able to look at altianalytics.com, seeing, you know, who passed to who, but also what the raw numbers look like at the end of a season. And so I want to go through some of those numbers with you here and talk about, you know, what do they mean? What's the story behind some of these numbers?
I'm all about the data.
Last thing I want to talk about then is this greater playoff picture. You know, even though the Breeze season is done, the AUDL keeps ticking here for another 2 or 3 weeks. And so let's put on our, you know, analyst hats once again and talk about who we think's going to make it out of the divisions and then who's going to play who and who's going to emerge out of this as the champion of the AUDL.
I'm really looking forward to watching some of these playoff games at Wildwood.
Yeah, it's true. We will be at Wildwood this weekend playing for various teams, and it will be fun to get out of, you know, long, tiresome days running in the sand and get in front of some televisions and enjoy some ESPN3 coverage of the AUDL.
It's going to be great.
So, all those things said, let's first start right here at home. Let's talk about that Breeze season. The Breeze miss out on the playoffs by 2 games. The Montreal Royale make it at 9-5, and that means, you know, you know, we look back at the season and we say 2 games is very doable. It's a very quantifiable, and considering, you know, looking at individual game results, there are two that really stand out at me as we just came up a little bit short. We came up a 9-8 in a rain shortened game against the Empire here in DC, and then we played a game where we lost by 1 to Montreal here in DC. Those are the close games that I think the teams that have gone to the playoffs win. So talk to me a little bit about what you see at the end of a season, and what does a team do to win the close games?
Well, you know, on the one hand, it's really easy to read into this a narrative of, you know, the Breeze went undefeated against non-playoff teams and never got a win against a single playoff team.
That's actually a good point. That's very true.
So we're right smack dab in the middle of the division.
The Outlaws we went 2-0 against, beat the Phoenix, of course, 3 times, and then the Rochester Dragons twice.
That's right.
So that's 7 wins.
So, you know, one thing that you've said before, and I kind of agree with, is that those close games at home, you got to win those games if you want to make the playoffs. And it bore out throughout the rest of the season. We saw that, you know, if we hadn't dropped that early loss to Montreal, it would have been a big difference when we were going up to Montreal. You know, it's just, you have a different mindset when you've played a team already. And, you know, we try to make some adjustments, but definitely struggled on the road.
Yeah. Good teams win against, you know, the teams they're supposed to, and I think the Breeze did that. But good teams win tight games at home. And those are the two games we're talking about.
Yeah. So, I mean, some of those are uncontrollables. Like, we talk about the rain-shortened game, you know. That was an uncontrollable for us. We had... The weather came in, and it shut the game down early. You know, we put ourselves in a position to play well moving forward in the second half. And we didn't get the chance to find out if we had what it took to close it out. But on the other hand, we went up to New York the next day and played in New York. And sort of the same thing happened where we played really tight in the first half. But in the second half, they really ran away with the game. And, you know, props to them and their defense for taking it to us in that second half. But it was frustrating to be in that position where we felt like we were performing and we were putting the pieces together. And then, you know, the result was not what we were hoping for.
Yeah, and I think if you want to hear some of that frustration of that weekend, I talked about it at length with Jarnell. So go back 2 episodes, Breeze Mega Fans, and listen to that Hot Air podcast. You can hear some of the frustration in his voice. So I think that's exactly what we heard.
Yeah, but like I said, you know, sometimes like the weather's outside of your control, but we had the pieces, we had the tools, we had the opportunities to put a good game together against strong opponents. You know, we're talking about teams that had really strong records against quality opponents. You know, I think Montreal, they beat Toronto, right?
That's right.
So, I mean, we're talking about...
That's the one blip on Toronto's resume this year.
We're talking about a quality opponent. And, you know, we had them. We were up in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
And we let it slip. And so I think that, you know, on the one hand, we can dwell on the frustration of that loss. But like I said before, we have a really exciting future.
So let's talk more about kind of in the abstract. What do you say to the person that comes in and says, you know, this is a mental focus thing. You know, a good team is not good physically. Oh, you know, they are good physically, but they are good physically in addition to solid mentally. They're not lapsing at the end of a game, and that's why you win close games. You know, is that the area that needs improvement? You've got the legs out there. You've got a lot of talented guys. We're going to talk about all these guys that put up big stats, including yourself this year. But it's really about that end-of-the-game focus. It's a two-point game. We play the last 3 minutes just as hard as anything. We know we can beat these guys.
Yeah. I mean, we had a coach that put us in the mindset of enjoying the challenge. That was our mantra all season. You know, we were going to face quality opponents. We were going to be in tough spots, you know, up, down, whatever it is. And his task for us was to enjoy the challenge of the game. And, you know, we try to do that. We worked on it in practice by being really excited about the little things and the small victories and, you know, enjoying the process of what it takes to become a quality ultimate team. And so I think that the good teams do that. I think they do it consistently, and they do it by bringing together positive energy from the top down, from the bottom up. Like, the whole team is on board and committed to that goal. And so, you know,
the whole team gets swept up in it.
Right, but the other truth of the matter is that you don't win every game, right?
Yeah.
It's really hard to do that.
Sure.
No matter who you are.
No one did it this year.
Exactly. And so, yeah, no one in the entire league went undefeated in the regular season. So, I mean, you know, we could talk about outcomes a lot, but I'm really enjoying this process. I really did enjoy it, and I'm looking forward to, you know, what happens next year with Breeze.
Yeah, and we've already heard of a lot of exciting news about that. So as our last kind of requiem for the Breeze season, I want to talk through these numbers, because they're exciting to me as a guy that just sees numbers on paper and kind of interpreting them overall. And so the first thing I'm going to ask you as a handler is about kind of, I think we're just getting our head in Ultimate around completion percentages. And not every throw is created the same.
That's right.
So that makes completion percentages a little bit misleading. But it still is easy to hone in on them and say, oh, if you're not hitting a 90%, if you're not hitting a 95%, you know, what does that mean? And so if I'm talking through the Breeze handler core right now, which I've got in front of me, Nico Lake, Jarnell Bajwa, yourself, Ben Fang, Daniel Selwyn, a.k.a. White Hat, and David Berg. Those are kind of the guys that spent a lot of time behind the disc on O and D line this year.
Yeah, there's a couple others too, but these are the guys that had the highest completions.
Over 200 completions, each right. One of these people. And so I'm looking at a guy like Nico Lake, who's got a 97% completion. And I'm looking at guys like David Berg that have an 88% completion rate. You know, is that because these guys are making different style throws out there? Are there players out there that are charged with being more aggressive with the disc, and is that what we're seeing representative in the stats right now?
It does take a village, so these guys have different roles on the team, and I think that the stats do reflect that to a certain extent. You know, obviously, we'd like everyone to maintain the highest completion rate that they can as a player. But yeah, I think that you have certain guys who are going to take higher risk opportunities, and they're not always going to work out. So, you know, a guy like Berg, who took a lot of shots, you know, that's reflected in his completion rate. But he also made throws that not everyone can make on a consistent basis. So I think, you know, he played very well. Nico, with that 97% rating, that's 100% legitimate.
With over 300 completions, that's got to put him in some rare air within the league.
Oh my goodness.
Ho-ho!
Got one. This is not snowboarding, however. And yeah, but Nico was a rock all season. He kind of flew under the radar, but he was always consistent.
I'll give you radar.
Super reliable, and it was a joy to be on a line with Nico.
Yeah.
Because you could really, really have faith in that guy.
So yeah, just to kind of round out what I was talking about there, I did want to actually mention the numbers as long as I've got a mic in front of me, and that is, you know, Jarnell with 467 completions, 93% completion rate.
Again, center handler really stepped into that role and did a great job.
And then you know, on paper, you, Ben Fang, and White Hat all look very similar. Right over 200 completions, and you're all got a 92% completion rate. Interesting that they all worked out like that, because I know all three of you guys. I've watched all three of you play, and you're certainly not indistinguishable on the field to end up with those similar numbers.
Yeah, it's interesting because White Hat played almost exclusively defense the whole season, whereas Fang and I, we were both around 60-40. I was biased towards offense slightly, Ben Fang towards defense slightly. But, I mean, I think we were all doing our best to move the disc a lot and get things moving regardless of what line we were on.
Yeah. So the next element of the stats that I wanted to mention here is some of the more traditional counting numbers, and that is goals, assists, and Ds. So let's talk about the top three players in goals this year. Let's just, you know, hey, I'm just celebrating this, and I want to celebrate it with everyone that listens to Hot Air. And that is Kerrigan with 37 goals. And then at 25, it's Duke, David Bolin Colchin, and Mark Flores with 23. Those are the top three goal scorers. The top three assists, Kerrigan also doubling up on that, top assist with 33. It's David Berg with 27 at number two, tied with yourself, actually, with 27 assists, Glenn Poole. And then the defenses, Andrew Air Force Allen at 20, and then it's Ben Fang in the second spot with 15, and then Brad Scott with 12. Do any of those numbers kind of jump off the page as something you want to talk about?
I mean, you look at those numbers, and immediately Kerrigan jumps off the page. He was an outstanding player this season from a production standpoint. He was also a very consistently reliable first option in our offense. I think just about every game that he played, we relied heavily on him to go and put himself in a position to get the offense started. And, you know, for a young guy, especially, really impressive.
Yeah, I mean, definitely games that he was inactive for whatever reason showed in the stats line is that, you know, it went from having a guy on the roster that maybe had four or five goals that game to a lot more even distribution of the goals. And
yeah,
that's an interesting thing to see reflected in the box score after a game.
And he and Duke were a 1-2 punch in a lot of ways. And so, you know, we didn't have them for our game in New York. And I got to tell you, it was a breath of fresh air when we got him back.
There you go. It's also impressive with those Ds, because I think, you know, just getting in double digits in Ds on this big field, and then Andrew Air Force Allen at 20, you know, bringing in a lot of anything suspect in any way, he's eating it up downfield. Those are impressive numbers.
He was a beast, yeah. Anytime that disc was in the air, it got to the point where even if he was trailing by 10 yards, we all knew he was going to get it.
Yeah, that's fantastic to be able to sit there and think that. That kind of confidence in your guy.
Let me shout out also Bryant Dean, because, you know, from an overall statistics point of view, you got to realize that he was not top three
in any of those
in any of those categories. But if you look at the number of Ds per point, top three, and also goals per point, top three.
That's interesting.
So great production. Oh, sorry, top four. Great production out of Bryant Dean. And then there's another player, Antoine, who we added late in the season.
That's right. He only had maybe four or five games under his belt this year.
He actually led in Ds per point the whole team.
Wow.
So talk about another young guy who's
so
exciting.
Small sample size, but yeah, for a young guy like that, exciting. Comes back next year, gets a full year under his belt, and watch him put up 20 Ds.
Got a great future.
So yeah, those are interesting numbers that always don't jump off the page either. You don't see a lot of those, you know, tweeted at by the AUDL or anything else like that, but points per game as meaningful as anything.
Yeah.
If you want to get in on this stat conversation or anything else we talk about here on Hot Air today, I'll also drop at the DC Breeze. You can follow us on Facebook. You can check out at the DC Breeze on Twitter and tweet at us. We had a contest on the last podcast on the last Hot Air, and we'll probably have more in the future as well to win some opening game tickets next year. So get in on that. You can also tweet at me, which is at the Greg Esser. And Glenn, you're on Twitter too.
I am GA Pool. P-O-O-L-E.
If you think we need to have Glenn Poole back on for another podcast, tweet all three of those and let us know. The last thing I want to talk about here today is about the playoff picture.
Yeah.
And so this is broadening our scope to talk about the entirety of the AUDL, but you and I often, when we're doing some workouts or something else like that, we'll even maybe bet some burpees on the outcome of some West Coast games, and so we can continue to do so here today as we talk about the AUDL playoffs.
We can spitball.
Let's first talk about the Eastern Division, though.
Sure.
So these are teams that you've played up close and personal. You've seen the whites of their eyes. Tell me how you think the Eastern Division is going to shape up.
I think it's really interesting, first of all, that the Empire, who finished higher than the Montreal Royale, are going to travel and play in Montreal for their playoff game.
That's right. Three teams are willing to do that. Give up the home field advantage in order to get their games in the same weekend. And I think this was a little bit about player availability.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, we're still competing with club opportunities, and I think it's going to be interesting to see where this sort of relationship between club and semi-professional ultimate goes in the next couple of years. But I will say that despite the Empire looking at a road game, they've played really well on the road this year. And if you look at their stats for games against Canadian teams, which is their three biggest competitors, probably.
Sure.
Other than us.
Yep.
They actually had the same offensive production, practically, in all their games. It was just their defense that played much better at home.
Interesting.
They are one of the better defenses in the league. I think they came in second in goals allowed for the season.
I think that's right.
So I think if they are able to step up, then they're going to have a great shot at taking down Montreal on the road.
Here's what I'll say about road games in the AUDL. I think we make a lot of, and I mean, certainly across all professional sports, there is this stigma of a home field advantage. And I think when you dig into numbers, it's things like, you know, calls made tend to favor a home crowd that's loud and boisterous. You know, certainly waking up in your own bed that day might play a role in this. But I think the single biggest factor in the AUDL why the home teams have a big advantage is because teams find it really hard to travel with their entire roster. Guys have a wedding one weekend, or guys, you know, that maybe have injury concerns don't travel with the team under just the chance that they might get to play that weekend. You see a lot of incomplete rosters take to the road, and I don't think that's going to be as big of the case in the playoffs. People are going to take their full lineups, and they're gonna bring these games.
That's true. I think that also the Empire are going to really benefit from getting Jack Marsh back in the lineup.
It's true.
He was an excellent player for them, a guy I've played against for many years. And he was away most of the season running a circus.
That's true. He runs a circus in St. Louis, I believe.
Yeah. And so he's just an excellent, excellent player with a lot of experience, and he's really going to help them out in the playoffs.
So I think from that dialogue, it sounds like you and I are in agreement that New York is going into Montreal and winning that game.
I think so. I mean, I would be surprised if they weren't able to handle it. I think they split their games during the regular season. Both home teams won.
Okay.
But it was close. Let me see here. Looks like the Empire lost by 3 away up in Canada and 1 by 2 at home in New York. So
two teams that have gone back and forth, and maybe the playoffs is their time to put the Royale to rest.
We sure hope so.
So that said, they're going to hop into the bus. And they're going to drive down to Toronto, and they're going to play a night game in Toronto that night.
Exciting.
That's exciting. That's daunting.
Yeah, I mean, Toronto's got a great crowd. They got a great team. And I would love the opportunity to play that game, but it's certainly going to be quite a task.
So I think when it comes down to that game, second one in a day for the Empire, you know, on the road up in Canada, crossing those border customs earlier that day. I don't know if that takes it out of you. It doesn't actually take it out of me. That invigorates me. But nonetheless, I think that's a game that I say my money's on the Rush to walk out of the Eastern Division.
Yeah, it's hard to call that game in any other way from a pure look at the season, how it's gone, the quality the Rush have presented throughout the whole 3 years, really. You really can't call that game any other way.
So let's talk about the rest of the league then. So these are teams we haven't necessarily seen up close and personal, but we've seen on ESPN3.
Seen a lot of highlights.
Seen a lot of highlights all over Facebook and Twitter. And, you know, these are a lot of players that are around the community in general. You and I played against in other formats.
That's true.
So talk to me about what you think, particularly about, let's start in the South.
One of the most exciting divisions, in my opinion. I think that the way the Jacksonville Cannons have performed this season has been a big surprise to just about everyone except probably the Cannons.
I think that's well said. I think that's exactly right.
Athletic team, a lot of talented players, that a couple of which were already names, but I think most of whom were not.
Yeah.
And, you know, I really hope that they take it to the Raleigh Flyers, but I kind of feel like the Flyers are going to take the wind out of Jacksonville sails.
I feel like the Flyers are the... Ooh, that was sneaky. I almost missed it. I feel like the Flyers are probably the favorite pick here.
Their offense is just incredibly productive.
Their offense is fantastic. They've got one of the two 50-50 guys for the year, 50 goals, 50 assists, and Justin Allen. But I'm taking my pick. I'm taking the Cannons. I've picked them a couple times this year to do good things in underdog situations. They can put out, I think, a line of cutters that are all 6'4 and above, and I think that'll prove problems to the Flyers to get up in the air and D those guys. Yeah, I like the Cannons to walk out.
You know, as a Floridian, I'm all on board.
Don't bring in the Florida connections to it. I don't love Florida.
I do love Florida, and I'm really excited about there being a Florida team that not only has participated in this burgeoning league, but also has done really well in their first season, which is tough to do unless you're from San Jose.
Let's slowly head west here, young gun, and talk to me about the Midwestern Division.
I'm going to glide.
Glide on in there.
All right. So Midwest, we're looking at...
It's Pittsburgh sacrificing home field advantage in order to go into Chicago. And then assuming that whoever wins that game is going to drive, I think, just a short hour and a half up the road to play. Actually, it might be more than that. I think Milwaukee's only an hour and a half up the road. Madison's a little further. But they will have to walk into downtown Madison and play against the Radicals.
Yeah. Again, those back-to-back games are really tough. I think that if anyone could do it, Pittsburgh has the talent to do it. You know, we've seen a lot of those players really explode for the last couple of years, but they've been playing Frisbee since they were in diapers, practically.
Playing in diapers, playing with each other since diapers.
Yeah, all those Pittsburgh youth programs are excellent. And then the college program out there, also very high caliber. So I'm excited to see what they do, you know, in Chicago. And then if anyone can pull off that upset against Madison, it's probably Pittsburgh.
So where's your money at?
I mean, I definitely think Pittsburgh goes into the divisional round.
Okay.
On the other hand, Madison at home, Pittsburgh's second game, Madison's defense, I'd be very surprised. I mean, they have such great depth in coaching. I'm going to pick Madison.
Okay. I think again, maybe the favorite, the division winner by record is Madison. I'm going to take Pittsburgh. They're a team that I know pretty well. As if you can call on your Florida ties, I'll call on my Pennsylvania ones. And I like Pittsburgh to walk out of the Midwest. It's going to be tough, but these are a lot of younger guys, a year or two out of college. They play tournaments typically all the time. I'm hoping they can, you know, handle two. And is it even the same day? No, it's a day after. So maybe...
Same day.
Oh, it's the same day?
You know, it is hard to argue with the Alex to Tyler connection.
It is. We saw it here firsthand last year.
We did indeed.
So the one that's, I think, the hardest to call is out west.
Yeah.
You know, these teams have been slogging all season. You know, an 8-6 record gets you to the postseason just because every win is so valuable out there. You've got a Seattle team going into the Bay Area. They play the Flamethrowers first, and then they cross a series of bridges down to San Jose and have to play the Spiders based on the result of that first game.
They do get to sleep, however.
They do get to sleep.
which is far, far more enjoyable as a player to be able to sleep in between games.
Yeah.
Even if it's a bye during a club tournament.
And we're not talking about a bus nap here either.
No. Which I've taken several times this season.
So talk me through this. You know, where's your gut at?
Well, I gotta say that San Jose is the safe bet to win the division. I really like Seattle going into San Francisco and taking the game. I mean, they have a core of guys that have also played together for years. They're exceptional, and I think that they have the talent to go get it done against a very strong Flamethrowers team.
Yeah, I think you're right. I like Seattle in that first game. I think it's hard to vote against the Spiders in the second game. They won it all last year. I have them coming out of my West.
I think in particular, which is going to be a factor in the overall championship weekend, is that in San Jose, the Spiders, they just don't lose.
Yeah.
They're an excellent home team. I think they struggled on the road a little bit. And honestly, if the championship was in any other city than San Jose, I would definitely take the field as opposed to San Jose.
Yeah. Interesting. Because that was my next question, was to ask you, you know, regardless if the Spiders are the ones that come out of the West, would you take the Spiders again to repeat before you take the chances of the three opposition teams that are going to come into San Jose and try to win the AUDL championship at the Earthquakes home soccer stadium?
Yeah, I think if you're going with history, you're going to call the Raleigh Flyers because a new team in the league has won the last 2 years.
Pittsburgh also, new team.
Pittsburgh also new team. I just don't see them getting past Madison.
Yeah, and I do.
Well, I think Flyers, their offensive production, I think that they could really score quickly and aggressively against Madison.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I guess both teams really could.
It's funny. If the Flyers make it to San Jose, I really like them. I really like their chances out there. I think Spiders are still my favorite, but I really like their chances out there. If, as I expect, the Cannons manage to upset them, I actually don't like the Cannons' chances as much when they show up in San Jose.
Interesting. Well, you think they're going to get past Madison.
So then they would have to play Madison. So I don't. I don't.
Okay.
I like the Cannons to emerge out of the South. I don't like them once they show up in San Jose. I think that they've got these big guys and they rely on these jump balls, but I think this zone defense, a couple of tall guys on Madison's team, some more practice guys been playing longer together are going to really challenge that Cannons core.
Madison does have Meshnick, who's leading the league in Ds. These are tough games to call.
These are tough games to call.
You know what I'm going
to
do,
especially since they haven't played a lot in the regular season, at least when you get to the Final Four.
Right. I think what I'm going to do, though, is looking at this bracket, I think even though the West is the consensus most difficult division to come out of, and in some ways you expect that team to be tempered by fire, I'm going to throw a caution to the winds, and I'm calling Madison for the championship.
Caution to the wind, pun, Madison championship, bold call. I think we've discussed a lot of different dimensions of this. I'm going to leave it up to you guys. Take it to Twitter. At the DC Breeze wants to hear from you, and I'm sure the AUDL does as well. Let's get it talking up. I'm going to call it here. This is the longest episode in history of Hot Air, and that means we were really full of the Hot Air today. But as a parting note, thanks Papa John's, thanks Oak Creek Apparel, Waveborn, Big Board, Kellogg Conference Center, Atlas Brew Works, Broke Royals for playing that entry music. Thanks for a great Breeze season, all you fans for coming out. We've got some exciting news coming up, I know, in the next couple weeks, the next couple months as the off-season progresses here. I've had some conversations with ownership, and they're already thinking about how to get a better product on the field next year. So a lot of exciting things going on here in the Breeze camp, and I'm happy to be the one the bringing you the news here on a semi-regular basis.
Really going for the gusto.
I mean, I'm just a personable guy. What can I say?
Well, thank you all for listening.
Thanks, Glenn, for joining me again.
It's been really fun.
And this is Hot Air signing off. I'm Greg Esser.
Glenn Poole.
Adios.